Welcome to the Bet the Jockey Show. My name is Josh and I'm your host. On the show, I interview entrepreneurs to hear their story and how they overcome challenges in their life and business. I'm also going to let you behind the scenes, behind the mic, into my entrepreneurial journey on a daily journal. Hang on to your horses, you're in for a ride with me, Josh Wilson.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the Bet the Jockey Show. My name is Josh, and today I'm having a conversation with a guy who it was his dream since he was 6 years old to write books, and he went through his journey as a technology guy and a computer guy, and he's got a really interesting story, but he's finally achieved his dream, and he really wants to share this dream with other people, and I want to introduce him to you guys. So ladies and gentlemen, welcome Mr. Richard Lowe to the Bet the Jockey Show. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me, yes.
Yeah. So since the age of six, you had this dream that you wanted to write books, and now you're doing it. Talk to us about that.
Well, that's true. When I was 6 years old, I started to read. My mom brought me to a library, and I started looking around at the books, and I picked up something by this guy named Isaac Asimov. He's a science fiction writer. And then over the years, started reading more and more and more, and then decided, I want to do this. This guy can write about anything. He makes things understandable. I mean, even nuclear physics. He wrote a book about nuclear physics, and I could understand it as a 6 or 7 year old. And that's amazing that a writer can talk about a subject like that to somebody so young. He also wrote science fiction and a bunch of other things. So I decided I want to be that. Well, unfortunately, life got in the way. As you know, it happens. And I had to go through school and into college, and then had to move out and earn money to survive, raise a family, the whole nine yards. And that was fine. I made lots of money, had a good career, worked at Trader Joe's for 20 years, for example, and established myself and built up a little nest egg. And then in 2013, decided, you know, it's time for a change, and I've got enough money to survive a few years. Let's just jump off the cliff and become a professional writer. Like, that's really scary because I didn't know anything about being a professional writer. I mean, I knew how to write, but as far as starting my own business, who knows? I mean, that was jumping off a cliff, and made it work. And now I'm making a good living, not as much as I was making at Trader Joe's, but that's fine. I don't need that much. Writing. I do ghostwriting. I write books, and I write products that are books, basically training courses for people on how to write and how to publish their books and how to promote their books. So that's basically the short version of my story.
Well, cool. Well, let's dive in a little bit. So you had a background in technology. Before Trader Joe's, what were you doing?
Well, I was the vice president of two different computer companies. Starting in 1981, I became a VP of a startup. So I was in college. I was at my second year of college, and then I got approached by one of the teachers who wanted to start a company. And I said, sure. So just annoyed the heck out of my parents because they wanted me to finish college and get a degree. You know, that was the big thing for them. They wanted an educated person. Fortunately for them, my sister got the MBA, and I didn't. But they were offering me, you know, a lot of money for the time, $50,000 a year kind of thing, which was a lot of money for me. And this was 1980, so it was a lot of money. And so I left college and joined the startup and managed a group of people. And then that company basically got sold. And so I went to a different company and was a VP. And then I worked two jobs at the same time. One was for a company that made what are called SCADA systems. Those are the systems that control things, devices like dams, sluice gates, metering, and things that allow an operator to sit there and say, okay, I want water to go through that dam or whatever. So I got a job doing that and being a VP at the same time. So because I figured I'd make more money with two jobs, right? So one was in, one worked in Camarillo and one in Long Beach. That's about 75 miles. So I commuted literally back and forth between there. And then, of course, I had to install a system in Las Vegas. So that meant I had to commute to Las Vegas once a week also for several months. So that got it tiring. And then I did my taxes and realized working two jobs, I made less money because I raised up in a bracket than I would have worked making one job.
Oh, wow.
Talk about a shock. Yes. So then I moved on to Trader Joe's from there. And that was a good move. It was nice and stable for 20 years. Got married at the exact same time I moved to Trader Joe's, got married and was married for 12 years. She passed away in 2005. And took an interesting little side road there, a little detour. I decided to become a photographer, mostly because she passed away and I was full of grief. And the thing about grief that I've learned is grief is not a friend. You don't invite grief home. You don't spend time wallowing in your grief. You don't try and understand it. It's not your friend. It's your enemy. So the best thing to do is to get rid of grief. And how do you do that? Well, I figured in my case, I get out of the house because I tend to be introverted and go out with people or into nature or something. So I started nature photography. And then I went to a Renaissance fair and ran into a bunch of dancers. And before you know it, I am the dance photographer, belly dance photographer for Southern California. I mean, literally I did 1,200 shoots, performance shoots, visited all the fairs in the United States practically. I visited almost 400 fairs shooting Renaissance fairs, wound up shooting wrestling matches and things like that, all kinds of stuff, just having a great old time. So kind of toyed with making a living, but it's really hard to make a living as a photographer. Everybody has a camera now. And wedding photographers don't get paid anything. I did some weddings, strange ones, not strange ones, but different ones than my culture I was used to. And it was an interesting time. It was an interesting time. I used to have birthday parties where I'd have 100 dancers come and dance for me. Just for me, literally 100 dancers come from the whole state. I've got videos on YouTube, you know, of the performances and things. It was fun. So I'd have 6 hours of dancing, just people dancing for me, women, all women, of course. And it was fun, but I kind of got burned out on that because I was moving really fast, doing a lot of traveling.
Okay. All right, hold on one second, Richard.
Okay.
You had birthday parties, and you, for your birthday party, you would hire 100 dancers to come dance for you, belly dancers, dance for you. That was your birthday gift to yourself.
Well, I didn't hire them, actually. They came for free because I used to photograph them for free. So I would photograph them the whole year. So as kind of a thank you, they would all come and have a birthday party for me. So I'd rent a facility. You know, it might be a bar, it might be a room in the back. And I eventually got so big, I wound up renting a community center for 2 days and had one in two different evenings. So I'd have 100 one night and 100 the next. I am not joking. And that was a fun time.
Well, I think we got to dig in here a little bit. There's a lot of guys out there going, what in the world? So you would you invite your friends? Would you invite other people? Or are you the only audience member?
Well, I'd invite the dancers, their families, of course, my friends, a few workmates. But mostly it was me. Mostly they came and they put on a show that lasted the whole night for me. And it was their thank you. It was their thank you for thousands and thousands and thousands. I literally took over 1 million pictures that I took during the year for them. So it was kind of a way to return what I've been doing, because I just gave them the pictures. I didn't charge for it, and I figured they figured that was cool. And I started by renting a pirate shop, and we had a big show in the pirate shop, and this was cool. I'm gonna keep doing it.
Yeah. So I mean, your story is really interesting, and I think that the people out there are going, well, this is a crazy kind of peculiar thing to go from, working in, dams, building the technology in dams, and then, you had a tragedy with the loss of your wife. So you had this grief, and you're like, okay, grief is not my friend. And I love that quote. So how do you get rid of grief is to get out, especially, from what you were saying. So you started photography and you saw some challenges, but you found your niche pretty quickly as a belly dancing photographer that does this. And then it turned into like the party of parties for you, having hundreds of belly dancers dance for you. This is incredible.
And I also, also had Renaissance Fair people, because I was a Renaissance photographer also. So the reenactors would come to the same parties and they would do a reenactment for me as well.
Oh my gosh.
I know, it was amazing.
That sounds like a hoot. Okay. So then, man, this is great. So where did you start to make the shift of, you know, you were saying that you were getting burnt out. When did you start to make a shift from photography to something else? What happened there?
Well, I was still working for Trader Joe's and I was in IT. So photography became my weekend / evening thing. And then I was working in the day and I was working 80-hour days. I mean, 80-hour weeks, 80-hour days would be hard.
That's very difficult.
So I was working long hours and then doing all these photography things and traveling. I was actually flying to different states to do Renaissance fairs and shows. And I finally realized, okay, the grief is long handled. You don't need to be doing this for that anymore. That's an excuse. You're here doing this because it's fun. And then it just became not so much fun anymore because it was so much. I wasn't sleeping well and things. And I realized I'd been working in IT for 33 years and I really wasn't pursuing my dream. Sure, I was paying the bills. I was building up a nest egg. I was fulfilling the American dream in certain ways, but I wasn't fulfilling my dream and my goal. And that's when I started tickling my mind. That's time to change. And in October of 2013, I thought, let's do it. Let's just do it. And there I went.
All right. So you're working at Trader Joe's. What was your title, or what did you do with Trader Joe's?
I was the director of IT, which meant I managed the director of computer operations, which means I managed all the computers and the people responsible for the technology in the corporate offices. So I didn't manage the stores. So I had about 1,300 computers of all kinds that I managed, the desktops, the servers, the information, the applications, and I managed a team and a team of consultants, and we kept basically Trader Joe's going.
Wow. So you're doing that 80-hour weeks, and on the weekends for fun, you're taking pictures of over a million pictures of belly dancers and Renaissance Fair people.
And mermaids. Like,
and mermaids. Let's not forget the mermaids, everyone. But you're taking the pictures. What was your like fellow coworkers, like what were they saying? Cause you're an employee, but then you had this entrepreneurial side hustle where you're like doing a life that a lot of guys would really enjoy doing, taking pictures of, you know, belly dancers and mermaids and Renaissance fairs. Like what were your coworkers saying as you were exploring your side hustle entrepreneurial life?
I think that they just kind of blanked it from their mind because it was so unbelievable to them. I mean, I talked about it and they came to some of the parties, one or two, and I don't think they were that interested. A lot of them were married, and you know the wives didn't really appreciate it. And belly dancers are very conservative, so they tend to normally, you know, the dances were normal; they weren't anything exotic. But I think they just thought I was going through a phase.
Yeah. Okay. So then you started to get burned out. You were working, and then you kind of remembered or revisited this dream that you had when you were six. What was that? What reminded you of that dream of, you know, to be a writer and to do that as a profession? Like what sparked that memory?
I'm very creative, and I was creating on the photography side, but I couldn't turn it into a real business. And I didn't want to really, because it had become a lot of fun and the dancers were becoming good friends. I'm still friends with most of them, of course. And then I remembered my dream. It just came to me one day, just maybe in a dream, that you know, what I really wanted to do was write. I wanted to go and I didn't have any idea what kind of writing at that point. All I knew is I wanted to become a writer, whatever that meant. So I had one last belly dance birthday party. I actually timed leaving for my birthday. Packed up the truck, hired somebody to move me. One of the dancers, a great lady named Mardavi, she's from Sri Lanka, decided that I wasn't going to drive alone. So she drove with me the entire trip from California to Florida, and then flew back home. She's a great lady. And she's a Bharatanatyam, I'm sure I pronounced that wrong, dancer. It's a classical Indian type dancing from India. Basically picked up and moved and completely changed my life. That was 5 years ago, and never looked back. It's a different life. It's much more calm. The stress level is very, very low. The stress is now, of course, I have my own business, and I have to make an income. And, you know, when you're a freelancer, that marketing is a big deal. That's one of the things I did not realize about being a writer and being self-employed is suddenly promotion and marketing becomes a big deal. And introversion is not possible. You need to get out there and you need to meet people and you need to talk to people. And if you're afraid of doing that, you better get over it now, because otherwise you're going to be talking to the landlady about rent.
Yeah. So before I ask this next question and to dive more into that, I want to talk to the audience. So you guys are listening into this audio, but Richard and I had the pleasure of being able to see each other through video. So I'm looking across and I'm looking at Richard, and he's a distinguished gentleman. He has a white beard, white hair, and he's sitting in an office, and it looks like he has thousands of books, like on bookshelves and such like that. So when I'm having this conversation, I'm talking with, you know, a distinguished, you know, gentleman, and he's very reserved, and but he's surrounded by books, and I could just tell, like, by looking at him, a few things. One is that, you know, he reads a lot of books, but two, it brings up such a funny question that I'm going to direct it as you. Did you actually, were you a belly dancer yourself, or did you get in any type of belly dancing or anything like that?
No. Okay. I was not a belly dancer. They did drag me up on stage a few times, and I did have a woman to each side of me kind of pushing my hips. I've never really danced. It's not been my thing. I was actually very introverted and shy before the wife passed away. And yeah. This kind of pulled me out of myself. It was a good experience. Dancers don't let you, when you're for the photographer, you have to extrovert. You cannot be introverted. They don't let you, and you don't want to be. So,
yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. Well, I'm so glad that, you found a way to, you know, serve your community, find a niche, a way to overcome grief and get rid of grief. So before we kind of go into your ghostwriting, I think that there's something there about that I want to learn more about overcoming grief, because I think a lot of times people go through a life pivoting moment, right? And to you is the loss of a spouse. And, you know, like on the show, what I want to do is I want to help people by asking, you know, sometimes tough questions, but how would you suggest or advise or maybe give us some wisdom on how to overcome grief, because there's a lot of people out there who get hit with something and they don't know how to deal with it, they don't know how to overcome it, and it looks like you've come out on the other side. So we'd love to capture some of your wisdom.
Sure.
So could you share some of that with us?
Well, first of all, it was a lot worse than I let on. She was sick for 8.5 years, chronically sick, where I actually did home health care. I was taught how to do her IVs twice a day, changed the dressings on her legs. She had wounds on her legs. She was hospitalized 9 times, 2 comas. I mean, it was a long, sad time. She was sick a lot. And it just got worse and worse. And then finally, unexpectedly, but expectedly, because you know, there was a sense that it was coming, but you never expect it. If she was gone, yeah, just like that, one day, boom, gone. And there was that sudden sense of loss. Then there was this sudden sense of, okay, I'm glad that's over. Oh my, I'm guilty about being glad that's over, you know, and grief and all the emotions that pop up. It was a bazillion emotions up and down and right and left. And, so I'd started doing nature photography about 2 months before she passed away, just as a kind of way to keep busy. So I go to Joshua Tree National Park and take pictures and things, leave her with somebody to take care of her and some of the other national parks. So I just kept doing that because I, I tend to be introverted, and I realized that I would curl up into a ball and you'd never see me again if I just become a person who went to work and went home, and if I let the grief take over. And so for a while there, I was traveling all around the country, taking pictures of all the national parks. I've got 50, 60,000 pictures of national parks, state parks, local parks, waterfalls. I went on hikes, have lots of adventures there, fell down a cliff, you know, had a cactus needle go all the way through my foot. I should write a book about myself.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, it was fun. And pushed myself to the limit. And I wasn't in great physical shape, because I tend to have a sedentary job. I've more or less put in a lot of physical activity in my current life, because that's one thing about grief, is if you're sedentary, grief gets a lot worse. I found sitting on the butt or sitting and watching TV is horrible for grief, because TV is full of violence and news brings up angry stuff and bad things. And so, first thing I had to do was turn off the TV. I had to get out of the house. I had to go do nature photography. Then I went to a Renaissance fair and I ran into the dancers. And because I'm introverted, I used the camera as a way to meet people. Can I take your picture? So the camera was in the way. So the camera was like a talisman. I don't know what you would call it. It was like a way to get to talk to people. So I got to the point in Renaissance fairs where I was, I'd see a couple, they don't know each other. I'd see a guy over here and a girl over there, and I'd put them together and say, okay, let's photograph you two together. Okay, I want you to pretend that you know each other, or that you have a romantic relationship. Now, hug each other, and then I'd have them kissing and stuff, and then I'd send them the pictures, and they'd love it. And they don't know each other. They're complete awesome. Strangers. I wonder how many marriages I'm responsible for. Anyway, I used to do that a lot. Fun. And then I'd step back and think, I was introverted. Boy, this is weird.
Oh, wow.
But back to the grief, the thing is grief makes people very, what's the word, solid. It makes them very, and they go into themselves, and there's this false information that that you've got to explore your grief, and you have to feel it, and you have to understand it, and you have to, it's like, that's just a bunch of hooey. That would be like inviting your drunk uncle over for a party at your house in the evening or something. You don't want to do that while he's, that's the best analogy I can think of. What you want to do is not do that. You want to get out. And I found in my case that getting out and being with people and being in nature and kind of extroverting myself to the world was the solution. At first, it didn't seem like the solution, because the grief was still there. But every day, I could feel it inching away a little more, and then it'd come back, and then a little more, and then it would come back, and then a little more, and then finally, it just kind of disappeared. And every once in a while, it comes back a little bit. It was a long process, but it worked.
Mm.
But I've seen many just curl up into a ball, and they disappear.
Yeah. Well, I'm for so many reasons, I'm so glad that you didn't curl up into a ball, because now the world gets to appreciate your art and your work, and I get to have a conversation with you here. So I'm glad you find that, and thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. So then one day it kind of just hit you. You're working a lot, you're taking pictures, starting to get burnt out. You said, you know what, I want to be a writer. So you jumped off this cliff and you say, I'm a professional writer. Now, what does that actually mean?
Well,
now I'm a professional writer. Yeah.
And all right. I figured it out after I jumped off the cliff. So after I left Trader Joe's, okay, so I left with a pretty good savings and things. So it wasn't like I was... had no money and was leaving. I did have a plan. So It wasn't as risky as it sounds. I'm living pretty good and things. And so I left and hired movers and moved to Florida, because I figured Florida was a little more calm than California. And I was right. California is very, very fast. And there's bazillion people there, and it's very, things are so significant. And then in Florida, it's like, whatever. what I mean? It's like, let's go to the beach. And it's a great place to write, especially in Clearwater. It's very calm and quiet. So I moved here, and then I had to figure it out. So I started writing a science fiction book that I'd started in the 1980s. And that moved along very slowly. I joined some writing groups, the writing critique groups. That's where the people tear your book apart and hurt your feelings. And met a guy who was a ghostwriter, and he had a company, and he hired me to be a ghostwriter. And I did about 3 or 4 books for him. And then I realized that he wasn't charging enough to pay me enough to do the work. I got paid $1,000 to do a 300-page book on an Afghani who didn't speak good English that I had to interview quickly because he was flying back to Afghanistan. And I thought, you know, this ain't $1,000. This doesn't even come close to covering this. But I added up the hours. I was making $3 an hour or something. Like, nah, this ain't working. So I said, okay, I'm done with you. The next day, I got my first big ghostwriting contract, $15,000. The next day. It's like, okay, I went from $1,000 to $15,000 in one day. How did I do that? Just getting out there and talking to people, and talking to businessmen. And I found one who said he needed a book that he'd written before about computer security updated from 10 years ago. So I did it. He paid me $15,000. And then I got another one who wanted me to write a book about his business, but he wanted me to write a novel about his business. So what is his business? What does a normal business look like before, during, and after his company comes in? That was fun. I got $10,000 for that. And then another one, and then another one, and then another one. So I was ghostwriting. And then I started writing my own books. And the thing about writing your own books that's interesting is you throw them on Amazon and you think, okay, they're going to sell. They don't sell because you got to promote them. Whole unknown area to me. Promotion? What's that? You know, I've never been a promoter. So I had to learn how to promote. So I'm promoting and promoting. I wrote a book on how to use LinkedIn, promote it and promote it and promote it. And then bam, overnight, 10,000 copies, just wham, sold. My promotion worked. And then I wrote a book on how to sell on eBay and bam, 1,000 copies. And started experimenting with different kinds of books, and some of them have sold pretty good, and some of them sell one copy a month. And I've written a lot under pseudonyms. That's a fake name. That's pretty normal because you want to have different genres that you write in, and you don't want to write in those different genres in your own name because people get kind of freaked out if they find out, okay, you write Westerns, but you also write romance, but you also write science fiction, but you also write this. That's just weird. So I've got a bunch of pen names. And I write a lot of books. Most of them now are short fiction books. So like a Western that you could read in two hours, or a romance novel, believe it or not, romance novel that you could read in 2 hours. So they're 10 to 15,000 words, 10 to 15,000 words. And now I'm actually moving one step ahead, and I'm writing books about how to write those kind of books and selling those books. And those are doing really well. A lot of writers, they don't know how to write a romance book. Well, romance is actually 40% of all books sold are romance books. Every book in the world in the United States is romance, 40% of those. So if you learn how to write romance, you got a much better chance of selling your books. I wrote a book on how to do that. Just that came out yesterday, and it's already selling like 100 copies, and it's selling pretty quick. And I'm promoting it because that's the key that most writers miss, is you got to promote. Amazon doesn't sell your book for you until your book reaches a certain level. And the reason why is 10,000 books a day are published. So they don't, they can't promote 10,000 books. So they promote the ones that actually start to sell, where they see the authors doing the work. But the ghostwriting turned out to be a passion, moving back to that. What I do and what I enjoy with ghostwriting is helping a businessman in any area. I've got I'm working on a book for dentistry. I'm working on a book for real estate, a high technology, artificial intelligence book. So it's literally all over the spectrum. What I do is I help them establish in their area that they are the expert and that they have credibility and they have the background to do what they're doing. So the one I'm writing on artificial intelligence, I just finished it. It's at a publisher now. It proves that he knows what he's doing. And that he's the guy that you go to if you want to find out about this particular type of AI. I wrote a book on the Internet of Things, same thing. He came to me and he said, I want to write a book on the Internet of Things, and I have one goal. I want the CEO of my company or any other company in the area to know who I am. And I said, okay. So we wrote the book. The CEO wound up writing the foreword for the book. So he achieved his goal big time, and he's doing speeches and he's having a great time. And that's what ghostwriting a book does. You probably aren't going to make your money back on Amazon. You aren't. What you're going to make your money back on is you're going to get business. You're going to go on speaking engagements. People are going to see that you have a book, and they're going to, oh, he's the expert. He's the one, he's the car dealer who's written a book about how to be a car dealer, or the inside scoop on what car dealers really know, or whatever. And that's what I like to do with ghostwriting, is understand that person, understand what he wants to do, understand why he's the best, and then write a book about it.
That's pretty interesting. So how many books have you written, Richard?
Well, I've written 66 books for myself. I just finished my 17th ghostwritten book. This is in 5 years. And wow. I've written now 7 of the how to write books that I'm selling. I'm not selling on Amazon. I'm selling them in a different way. And I'm writing one of those per week now.
Oh my gosh. So, all right. So I want to get some advice for the audience, some free Richard advice to the audience. Give us maybe one way that people are not promoting their book well, that you have kind of unlocked, that you do. What's a good way to promote a book that most people aren't doing?
Okay, when you want to promote a book, the first thing you need to do is ignore all of the things that people are trying to sell you. As soon as you start to promote your book, you are going to be inundated with a tidal wave like the one that hit Japan, of people trying to sell you ways to sell your book. And every single one of them isn't going to help you sell your book. They're going to take your money. And you might sell a few copies, but I spent probably $10,000 trying to sell my books for nothing. Didn't do anything. What you want to do to sell your book, or what I did successfully, is first of all, build your mailing list. The gold is in your email list. That's where the gold is. So everybody who buys the book should give you their email address if you can possibly get it. So you have at the back of the book, you should say, go here to sign up to receive updates to the book, to receive my newsletter, to get a free gift is usually the best thing, to get the missing chapter with the special secret, something like that. Put that in the back of your book. They'll click on that link if it's a ebook, or they'll type in the link. They'll go get that free gift. They'll stay on your mailing list, and now you got them. And you send them information on the mailing list. Don't send an advertisement every day. Send an advertisement every fifth day, and send them a tip every day, if you're going to send every day, or once a week, or whatever your thing is. So you want to build them up as friends. You're helping them. You're saying, here's like my writing thing. I send a tip. Here's the way you write 10,000 words a day. I write 10,000 words a day. How do you do that? Well, here's how I do it. That's one tip. Here's another tip. How do you find a publisher? There's another tip. Just a quick tip. And then the next day will be, okay, I've got a book and you can go buy it here that tells you how to write in this particular way. And then the next day will be another tip, and then another tip. So it's not always a constant stream of ads, because that makes people very annoyed. The other thing is, you cannot give away a free thing every day, because then you train your readers to always expect something free and they won't buy anything. So you've got to make sure that you're not giving away the farm. So the good stuff is never given away. The really good stuff. You give away good stuff, but you sell the best stuff. And that gives you a way, if you're a normal author, to let people know that you've got a new book coming out. You always have a new book coming out. You're always working on it. What's the progress on it? What's it about? What are they going to learn? If it's a fiction book, you know, like if you were writing the next Game of Thrones book, you would be giving them hints and tips and stuff about what's coming out. And that's where your gold is in the email list.
That's good. All right. So now I want to switch to the ghostwriting side. So we have authors and people who aspire to be, you know, professional writers and ghostwriters, and you write 10,000 words a day. What is one way to do that? Because a lot of people have the desire to write. But, what advice would you have for us who want to write but have no clue how to get 10,000 words on paper.
Let me give you some tips. First of all, 10,000 words a day is, if you do an 8-hour day, or let's say a 10-hour day, just to make the math easy, is 1,000 words an hour. And that's really not that much. That 1,000 words an hour is not hard to do. It's 10,000 words a day sounds really hard, but when you break it down by hour, it's not as hard as you think. So I write for 45 minutes and I take a 15-minute break and take two laps around the complex that I'm in. So that's about actually a mile. So literally 45 minutes and then we'll walk a mile, 45 minutes, walk a mile. So I'm getting out because the screen is sitting right here. And if it's sitting right here, the thing that happens, writer's block. The screen actually causes writer's block. I've found you're typing, 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 typing. Your brain kind of goes into the screen, I guess, and you can't write anymore. The other thing is make sure your environment is calm. Make sure that the family or friends or whoever you're with knows when the door is closed or the sign is up or the red coffee cup is on its side or whatever, you're writing and you are not to be disturbed for anything unless the place is burning down or somebody's dying. And even then, they better be somebody important. Because yeah. The interruptions will kill you. Turn off Facebook, turn off your phone, turn off everything that will interrupt you and write for 45 minutes and take a break.
Wow.
And I use voice to text. So I actually speak it and it goes into Word automatically. And it actually is about a 99% rate of being right. Of course, you got to edit it and fix all of the things where the dictation misunderstood what you were saying. That only takes a few more minutes. And doing that, I can literally write 5,000 words an hour.
What program do you use for your voice to text?
Dragon Professional 15.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, this is really, really good, Richard. This is good advice and good conversations. You know, for the people listening in who are business owners, you know, a lot of times business owners, they have this idea that, you know, they don't have anything to write about, or, you know, maybe they're an expert in their space, but, you know, what are some benefits to writing a book if I'm a business owner? Cause that's, you know, that's your ideal client. Like, so if I'm a business owner, why should I write a book?
Because when people in society look up to authors, if you've written a book, I mean, look at every politician and every major CEO out there, not every one of them, but all of them. I mean, why did Hillary Clinton write a book? Why did Donald Trump write a book? Why does this senator write a book? Why did Lee Iacocca write a book? They wrote a book because that established them as the name. Lee Iacocca writing a book about how to run a company, he is the man now who knows how to run a company, and he is sharing it with you. He is talking to you, the reader, directly saying, this is what I learned. I am the guy. I have the experience. And you should believe me because I wrote a book. And look at all these other CEOs. They didn't write a book, but I did because I'm a giving kind of person and I want to tell you about it. What a book does is it gives the press something to talk about. Hey, he wrote a book. It gives you something to talk about at speaking engagements. And if you're a businessman, you should be doing speaking engagements regularly, like once a week, podcasts and in person. And a book gives you something to sell at speaking engagements and to give away and to so forth. If you have an office where people come in, like I wrote a book for a car dealer, he has the books behind him. And you go in there and the book has his name on it. And the person who comes in goes, you wrote a book. Yeah, it's How to Buy a Car. What to look out for? What car dealers rip you off? But you're a car dealer. You're telling me how you rip me off? No, I'm telling you how the other car dealers rip you off. And voila, he is the expert and he's helping you. And then he goes and gives speeches on it. And that's what a book does for a business, is it gives you a hook. It gives you an advantage over everybody else in your area. Because most people don't write books. It's too expensive. It's funny how much money they'll spend on stupid things and they won't spend the money on the one thing that will help them, is writing a book. It will help more than a blog. It'll help a lot more than social media because it will give you something to talk about on your social media and so on.
Yeah, that's good. I like your example of the car dealer where it's like, I'm going to give you tips and tricks on actually how to essentially work for me or with me. Right. Mm-hmm. it's educating your people on why they should use you and also why they shouldn't use the other people. And it's a great sales tool from what it sounds like. Richard, thank you for that input. I really like your story. I really like, you know, what you're doing. You're really fascinating. If someone's out there and they're thinking of writing a book, or, you know, they're a business leader and they need some help and they're looking to you, two things. One is, what can you help them do essentially? So what do your services actually look like? And then how could people find you or get in touch with you?
Well, I'll start with the last question first. I have a website called thewritingking.com. So it's literally thewritingking.com. And if you go there, I've got a blog with a couple hundred articles, and you can contact me from there easy enough. Also, you can send an email to Rich, R-I-C-H, at thewritingking.com, and that will get direct to me. What was that other question? Sorry.
Yeah, so if I wanted to write a book, if I was, I am a business owner, but like, what can you do for me, and what does that look like? You know, like, I know that you have a process, but what would that look like if I want to write a book?
I have basically three different book writing services, depending on the needs and the budget. The first one is I just do hourly, and I ask for a certain number of hours up front, and we subtract from it as we go. And that's usually when they don't really know what they want to write, and we're trying to figure it out. So it's kind of a consulting service. It's usually 20 hours, works out about $1,000-$1,200. And we work through. I can help them in any area that they need. So and then that usually gets them started on the book. That might move directly into what I call a book coaching or collaboration project, where it's also hourly, same thing. It's just more of those where we work together on the book. Usually that works on the ones where they're the knowledge expert. Where, like, when I'm working on an artificial intelligence book, I don't know anything about artificial intelligence, but they do. They don't know how to write, but I do. So I become the writer, and I'm basically, we work together and write the book together. Those, that typically goes at an hourly rate, and it typically doesn't work out to be anywhere near as expensive as you would think, because it goes pretty fast. And then the third kind is probably 2/3 of what I do, is where they just say, just write this book for me. And they don't even have time to do more than a couple of interviews. And I have to go out on Google and figure all this stuff out. And I write a book and hope to God that they like it. And yeah, they always do. I mean, usually there's changes and things, and then all I have to do is interview them for the stuff that's unique. So if I'm writing a book about retirement, which is what I want to just finished, go out on the internet, find all about retirement and how it works and stuff, put it all together, have a few interviews, write a book. And then they've got a finished book, and they only had to spend a few hours at it. They actually have a book. So those three different models.
That's pretty good. That's pretty cool. All right. So you told us how to find you, thewritingking.com, and you gave us your email address. And thanks for coming on the show, sharing, you know, your story and how you overcame grief and the wisdom you shared with us. I believe that it's so valuable, you know, like being able to keep going when, you know, life, there was something hard at you. So number one, I commend you for, exploring different things from damn computers, to Trader Joe's, to photography, to, writing. You know, I love the journey you're on, Richard, and, I'm glad to have you on the show. You're a great jockey yourself. And, man, just, this was a blessing to chat with you today. Appreciate you.
One more website that's brand new, but is going to be built up in the next few days, probably by the time this airs, is fictionmasterclass.com. And that's where my fiction products and books will be. So if anybody wants to write fiction and learn how to do it, they can go there.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening into the Bet the Jockey show, in this conversation with Richard. Hope you're having a wonderful day. To find out more about Richard, you could go to the links that he mentioned, or you could go to the show notes, and you can, you know, click on them directly and get a hold of them. So I hope you guys had a wonderful conversation being a part of this with us, and we'll see you guys on the next episode. Bye, everyone.